The journey of looking for my daughter Brianna, the investigation side of things. Why is it taking so long? You have the people. Yeah, sex trafficking, sex rings, it's massive here in New Zealand, and they're running these things out of a normal household. And those pages to sell these girls. He was done for digital penetration of 6-year-old girls. Yeah, here's another one. He was sexually abusing sister's daughter. You wouldn't think it would happen here in New Zealand. So I'm Jazz to everyone. You can also see me on Facebook as Jasmine Gray, but better well known as Jazz. I'm originally from Aukuni, but we also whakapapa back to Rotorua. And my other side of the whānau are from Rarotonga. Obviously, a lot more people know me through the journey of looking for my daughter, Brianna. She's been missing since August 28th of 2022. It's been a long time. But my whānau and my friends know me as Jazz, the mother of seven. I was at a point in my daughter's investigation where I was thinking to myself, I've got all this love and support around me. What about all these other families out there that have no one? You don't see any posts, you don't see them at the forefront of anything. And I just felt this overwhelming sense of mamai for other people. And that's how the march came about too. The frustrations of the investigation side of things. Why is it taking so long? You have the people, you have their statements. And in my eyes, I felt like they had enough evidence. And that's what gave me the push to march to Parliament. And talking to other families as well, hearing their journey, how the investigations have gone for them. I thought there's something not right here. There's too many flaws in the system. And that's how we ended up marching. Yeah, sure. We have one of the other mamas, Mama Cherie. She lives down in Otago. So her boy, Joel, he was found 11 months later. Where his car crashed, his body was found 100 metres away, but his body wasn't found till 11 months later. You get what I mean? So if his body was only 100 metres away from where the car accident was, how is that possible? And the investigating team that she had said that they'd searched that area. Yeah, the lack of resources, lack of transparency for our families. We don't get anyone advocating for us. We have to choose a spokesperson that's inside the whānau, which is full of emotions, So.
Well, what eventuated from the march?
Well, we were meant to have a meeting with the senior victims advisor from Parliament, but we're still waiting for that. I do understand that there is elections on at the moment, but still, so it's at a bit of a standstill with that. I don't want to march again, even though it was a peaceful one, it was very empowering, but we shouldn't have to march. But where do you start, right? There's so many flaws in all systems that where to begin? Yeah, sure. So I was born in Porirua. Lived there for the first 4 years of my life, and then Mum built her house here on the coast, the Kapiti Coast, Paparaumu. There was a bit of a journey, so I will share. And the reason why I'm sharing this is because a lot of people do ask me, how do you stay so strong? I would have crumbled by now. Takes a lot of struggle, takes a lot of mamai to get to this point of it's a bit of a fight, I should say. So when I was a little girl, my mum tried her best. She was a hardworking lady. We always had cooked meals every day on the table, 5 o'clock. Our house was always immaculate, always well kept. She was a beautiful mum. But unfortunately, there was a lot of violence in our home as well. You know, that was due to the males that were in her life. I wouldn't say it was once were warriors, but nearing on that, you know, I still remember that fear of being a little girl and running to my mum's friend's house every time he'd kick off. My stepfather would kick off. And it's a lot of the times too, it was alcohol rage. So yeah, me and my sister, my sister that's a year older than me, we always lived in that fear of when it's going to kick off. And he also sexually abused me and my sister for a few years there. It took a long time for that to come out. I still have a lot of anger towards him, and unfortunately I had a lot of anger towards my mum because of it too, thinking that she was the one that was meant to protect me. But how was she meant to when she didn't know? And when she finally separated from him, I was about 12 years old, and it's like somebody opened up the cage doors for me, set me free. Set my whole house free. But then once I hit the teenage years, you know, my mum was working three jobs at that time, so she was hardly ever home. So obviously we could get up to a bit of mischief. Yeah, I ended up meeting Brianna's father when I was 14. And, yeah, he was my first. And 3 months later we find out that, you know, we're pregnant with Brianna. And I'd only told one of my mum's best mates because, you know, I was like, oh, she's got my back. She won't tell no one. But anyway, she couldn't hold it in. She ended up telling my older sister. And I still remember that day at college. My older sister was standing outside the classroom door. I could see her face looking at me through the window. I just knew it then. Okay, my whānau know now. First time I'd ever seen her father cry was when she was born. And, yeah, it was all on from there. Massive life-changing experience for him as well. He was only young himself, you know, trying to find his way through the teenage years as well. And he was sitting a course at that stage, but he gave that up, went to work, did a bricklaying apprenticeship. And then we just both grew from there. She was born on 1st of the 1st 2000, so she was a millennium baby. I probably was the youngest for that day, but nothing to be proud of or anything. But, you know, I was just lucky that I had that unconditional support there by everyone in my whānau, especially my mum. But me and Brianna's father had 5 kids under the age of 7. But we had our first 3 here in New Zealand, and then we shipped off over to Aussie. Oh, she saved both of us, that's for sure. We weren't going down the right paths at that stage, you know, just being young, dumb, and trying to, I don't know, navigate our way through our childhood. We both came from traumatic experiences, so we, you know, we didn't really have, what would you call it? We didn't have a sense of direction, so we grew up together. It wasn't all perfect, but there was a lot of times there where we were fighting, you know, fighting over partying. He was always drinking every weekend. And all I wanted was stability in the home. Didn't want that around the kids all the time because I grew up around it. He was a good father. He was always striving to do his best, but he was a perfectionist. So if things weren't going right, you know, like everything in his wardrobe was straight, all colour coordinated, his hair had to be always done, you know, by the right hairdresser, all that sort of thing. If we went to the wrong barber, you'd know about it. who's that type of person. So, but yeah, he studied to become a personal trainer on the side, nailed that. So yeah, he was always trying to do things to better himself, but it's just unfortunate. He didn't have the right tools to be able to manage his mental and emotional well-being. And then I ended up finding him at 6 o'clock in the morning. I got up to get our little girl a bottle. She was only 2 years old at that stage. I opened the door and he was just right there. He was hanging. He was pale. His tongue was hanging out and his eyes were half open. That's an image that I will never ever forget. But the adrenaline kicked in straight away and I just lifted him up. He was a heavy man, but I was holding him. I screamed out. My mum was staying with us at that stage. I screamed out for some help. She came running in. She went and grabbed a knife, and it was that tight. And when she cut it, it cut pretty much straight away. She cut the rope. Yeah, and it was just all on from there. He just dropped to the ground, and then I instantly started CPR. But all my babies were home at that stage. Brianna was nearly 10 years old. She's seen everything. She heard everything. Yeah. So that day knocked the wind out of me. You can't describe it really. You know, we were good parents. Made sure that he was all about the education. He had this book of quotes inside his car. So he'll come pick up the kids from my work where we had after-school care. And on the way home from work, he'll get one of the kids to pull the book out and read a quote out of the book and elaborate on that quote. Yeah, that's just some of the things that we would do as parents. You know, we were always striving to give them the best life possible, even though there was, you know, alcohol and partying in the background. So we did shelter them a lot from a lot of things. So when he did pass, it was a massive shock to my children, and it was a massive shock to my system too. So I didn't cope with it very well. I didn't even smoke cigarettes. I didn't touch pot. Very rarely touched alcohol. And within a couple of weeks of him passing, all of that came in. Medication from, prescription medication from the doctors. And that was probably the worst one out of all of them. It was touching the prescription. If I had any advice for anybody, I wouldn't go anywhere near it. Just numbs you. Sends you off into la la land where it's not realistic. yeah, the worst thing you want to do anyway is numb yourself. So through that grieving journey, Brianna saw everything. Being the eldest, she had to help me out with the kids. As I wasn't coping very well. So there was a couple of times where I left my kids behind. I did that for about 2 months, took off and left my kids with my mum, try and find myself. But, you know, that whole time that I was away, myself was with my children. And there was a stage there in 2013 where my kids should have actually been taken off me. I was real heavy on the prescription, medication, you name it, Xanax, codeine, Indone, Valium, sleepers. But I'd fight it, and I was mixing it with alcohol and pot to stay numb, not realizing that the numbness was wearing off from that adrenaline rush of when I first found him. Once that numbness starts wearing off, you're trying to find other things to keep that numbness there so you don't have to feel. So, yeah, I'll admit that in 2013 I struggled, and Brianna had to see me go through all those struggles. There was a morning there in October of 2013 where I'd taken way too many sleepers. I can't remember how many, but I'd slept. Brianna said that I'd slept for about 16 hours. She thought that I was dying. But she looked after the kids. She looked after the house. And you got to remember that she was only 13 years old. So she watched over me, watched over her siblings and the house, making sure that everything was being taken care of. And she was at the point of wanting to call the ambulance because her mummy wasn't waking up. And then when I woke up, just that look on her face, I saw the fear in her face, like, I'm about to lose another one of my parents, my last one. And she expressed to me how she felt, and that's the last time I ever took any prescriptions. That was like a spiritual awakening there. But she was that angel standing there like, snap out of it, Mum. You know, we're about to lose you then. I thought you were dying. So all the prescriptions that I had all went down the drain. I never looked back, so now I even struggle to take Panadol. So from that journey, because I took my kids down that path of grief with me, not realising that I was dragging them along with it, Brianna suffered. I didn't show her how to mentally, emotionally, physically cope. I showed her other ways. I didn't give her the right tools. So through her later teenage years, she struggled quite a bit. I won't blame myself and I won't blame her father either. It's just at that stage I didn't know what to do and what not to do. But if I can help anybody else through that, I would say you need to feel. Don't numb yourself. Your kids are watching and they're learning. They're soaking up everything that you're doing. You know, monkey see, monkey do. Those childhood traumas, cycles, they'll carry those things on. And that's what I saw in Brianna when, in her later teenage years when she started drinking. She reminded me a lot of her father when she was reactive. With her anger issues as well, she reminded me a lot of myself too. How I'll just, boom, you know. Always had a reaction to everything. I was ready, just always ready to jump at someone. So my baby, my poor baby, didn't know how to manage her own well-being because me and her father didn't teach her. And you've got to remember too, I was coming through that healing journey, that spiritual awakening, so trying to keep myself up at the same time as raising teenagers and trying to help them navigate through the healing process as well. She was doing really well in school. So she was in one-on-one classes. She was quite nerdy, you know, but she loved reading. She's a very smart girl. But at the same time, you know, struggling with those inner demons of the trauma would always get in the way, like she couldn't stay focused. I know she'll know now. If me and her father could take it back, oh, we would in a heartbeat. I always say that to my kids too. If Dad could come back, he would. He would for you kids. But we're just at a point in our lives where we couldn't be together anymore. And they now that they're older, they do understand that, but it was really hard for Brianna to understand why we took them down that path. Why did he leave and why did I go downhill like that? But, yeah, there's a lot of guilt inside me where, I do think about why Brianna was hanging out with these people that she was last with. Thinking, far out, did I push her into that lifestyle? If this and that didn't happen, maybe she wouldn't have been with them. Yeah, a lot of those things sit in the back of my mind, but that's one thing that I'm working through is the guilt.
Yeah, there were a lot of warning signs there. A couple of months before she disappeared, you know, her whole personality was changing again. Like she wasn't that bright, bubbly girl. She'd stopped doing her TikToks, her dancing videos. She used to send them to me all the time, all her drafts and that. And how's this one, Mum? I wasn't receiving those. She stopped coming out for our, you know, coffee dates on the weekends.
Where was she staying?
She was staying up at my mum's place, boarding at my mum's place. My mum was like her second mum, you know. You can do no wrong when you're the grandchild. but, yeah, that was the best place for her to be anyway. At the age of 17, that's when I saw the dramatic change. And, you know, the same thing, repeating another cycle through a similar type of man, if you get what I mean. She really struggled with that. All she wanted was to be loved. And, yeah, there was a hard journey to see her go through once they split a couple of years later to help her rebuild from that. Well, that was tough. And those people that, like, she was last with when she disappeared, those types of people I didn't know about. She had that really well, but then I could kind of tell within her personality that something was different. You know, company matters, eh? So it does show the effects in their day-to-day life. Yeah, you couldn't even hold a conversation with her. A couple of months prior, that's the biggest difference that I noticed in her, you know, just engaging in a conversation with her. She wouldn't look at me. Everything was short, sharp and sweet. She wouldn't tell me what she was up to. But deep down, I knew something was wrong. It was to the point where I actually started following where she was going. So the weekend before she disappeared, I rang my mum and said, she's not answering my texts or my phone calls. Where is she? Mum goes, oh, she's just down at the movies with one of her friends. I shot down there, checked all the cinemas, rang my mum back. I said, she's not here. She goes, she must be in the car park. And I was like, nah, I don't see anybody in the cars out here. That's the extent that I was going. It was almost like my wife was saying, you know, something is not right. I mean, everything is on my lives about what I know. Yeah, so everyone knows that she was reported. So when you're like reading news articles and that, if it's reported, that's coming out of their mouths of the people of interest, the people that she was last with. They said that she ran off down the beach. Yeah, we got to meet one of them on the beach actually a couple of days before, a couple of days after she disappeared. He was one that we were first initially in contact with, and to hear his story and his statement, he said that he was alone with Brianna on the beach. It was just those two. And straight away I said to the cop, there's no way in the world she wouldn't have come down here by herself with him. And there had to be two or more men here to take her down. She was a fighter. And yeah, I just knew straight away he was bullshitting. The detectives know who they are. They've been in questioning. They've questioned them numerous times. Like I said, the first one made his statement and we were watching him make his statement. And to find out 2 weeks later that there was a second male involved, like you've got two different statements there. How can that not be enough? It's another reason why I marched to Parliament. Like, I'm not comprehending this whole investigation. How can you not take them down because of that? So the house that Brianna was at in Palmerston North on the Saturday night, that was the 27th of August. We've questioned them ourselves. We've gone to see them. We've gone door knocking. And they were all lying to us at the beginning. But we've had to keep adding that pressure, keep questioning them, you know, always be in the forefront of their minds. And eventually the truth does come out. And one of them did admit that he saw Brianna in a state where he's seen somebody like that before, like they've been rinsed. Yeah, so through this journey, I've had to find out what rinse is myself. So rinse is a GHB date rape drug. It's a liquid form, and you only need to take a little bit of it to feel the effects of it. If they give them too much, instantly goner. So, yeah, I was told that they'd given Brianna too much rinse, to the point where she was incoherent, and she had mummied her pants in the front seat of the silver Peugeot. They tried to get her to snap out of it, but she didn't. Nobody got her help.
The last confirmed sighting of Brianna was at 11:15 a.m. Brianna has spent the rest of the day at her acquaintance's family home in Palmerston North. Her male acquaintance has said that he would take her, and late in the evening they've left. However, before leaving the Manawatu, they've picked up a second male. One of the male acquaintances has used Brianna's card at an ATM and withdrawn $250. Witnesses have reported Brianna becoming upset and run off down the beach into the dark. And although one has searched for her, they haven't located her.
I think they've staged it there. I think that's, they've planted all her belongings and stuff there to make it look like she's run off. But if, you know, one's saying that she was incoherent and lifeless, like she couldn't even move her limbs, in that vehicle on the 27th, the night before, how can she be running? You know, if that first guy was saying that he was alone with Brianna on the beach, why would you lie about it? And why were her belongings found on the beach? Why didn't she have any of her clothes on? There's a lot of things that you come across that, you know, you're oblivious to, that you wouldn't think would happen here in New Zealand. The drug world, the drug and sex world, you know, the underground stuff.
Like sex trafficking.
Yeah, sex trafficking, sex rings. It's massive here in New Zealand, and they're running these things out of a normal household. Well, it's not a normal household, but you wouldn't even realise it's right next door to you. This is crazy. So we've gone, you know, like digging, when you're starting to investigate and stuff, you start digging for a lot of information on these people. And we've found back in 2013, one of them was selling girls. There's fake Facebook pages out there. They're disguised as casino games. And they're using those pages to sell these girls. So they start getting them hooked on P, and when they can't afford to fork up their bill, how are they going to pay their tick bill? You know, they've got no choice but to sell themselves. So, one of these guys is selling these girls on there. You can plainly see that's his Facebook page. And the men on there that are saying, pick, you know, send me a pic. But you click into their pages, they're normal, you know, you think that it's just a normal husband, father. They've got their children on their pages.
So this is something that you'll come across on social media?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, passed it all on to the detectives, and I don't know how their high crimes tech team didn't find it. We found it. And this page is still running.
And it's connected to one of the guys.
Yep. Yep. And then you start, you know, messaging the people, other people that are on that page. It's to the point where we've even contacted some of the girls. And some of those girls have reached out as well, that they've had incidences with these same men. And they were too afraid to come forward. They've been stripped naked. Two girls were stripped naked, left at Kimberley Reserve by two of these men.
One of them is a registered sex offender as well, isn't
it? Yeah, he's a registered sex offender.
The same guy?
No, he is the one that collected Brianna's belongings off the beach on the Sunday afternoon. So he was done for digital penetration of 6-year-old girls. And he's still allowed around children because he has adult supervision. That's what OT has said. Not much they can do about it because he has adult supervision around him.
So what ended up happening where she started being around these sorts of people?
It would have been through P. Like, it's not a hard one for me to admit. It's because it's the reality of it. And if I can shed some light on the situation, P has nothing but... It's the devil's drug. It takes you nowhere near heaven. It takes you to hell. So, you know, there needs to be a lot more awareness around the drug. And a lot of people that tend to gravitate towards it are the ones with childhood trauma. We're a very traumatised nation, and that's why I feel like it's New Zealand's epidemic.
How it's been off the piece and stuff like that?
It's been pretty shit, actually. To be honest with you, there's no transparency. Hardly hear from them. Look, I understand that they have their protocols and procedures that they've got to follow, whatnot. But, I'd like some form of communication about what's going on. You're still working in the background. If you tell me that you're about to do some searches and that, at least touch base with me and say, sorry, nothing came of that search. I don't even get that. Beforehand, you know, you watch this type of thing on movies and stuff. Now I actually feel like the movie is reality. Like you said, don't be watching horror movies because the real horror is, you know, out here. But, yeah, in all seriousness, it's some massive eye-opening stuff to the point where you've got your security cameras up. You're checking your security cameras all the time. Paranoia is unreal. I'm parenting my kids out of fear. You know, if they're home 5 minutes late, I start getting into panic mode. I'm messaging my daughter in Australia, get a hold of your sibling, can't find them. You know what I mean? It's not a nice thing to be living in fear. And, you know, even though we don't post about things, especially as of recent, it's because we're out there getting things done, getting our feelers out in some search areas, putting up more flyers because they have been getting taken down. There's a lot of things that we're working on, like the investigations board. We're getting all the information out so we can see it like a vision board.
What's it like knowing that these guys have actually struck before, you know what I mean, and have actually done stuff like this before, and most likely for a very long time?
Yeah.
And then to now learn all of these things about them now, about all of this... It's
sickening. It does make you angry because the warning signs were there. How could you let them, you know, out of prison without being monitored? They've got these sick obsessions, these sick fantasies. You know about them. Why are you not watching them?
Because one of them just recently went to prison as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's another one again.
Yeah, there's another one. He was sexually abusing one of the suspect's sister's daughter. It's so messed up. You can't even explain it. So he's currently in segregation.
So most of these guys have a serious history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the one that's been done for child abuse, he's part of his conditions. He's not allowed to drink alcohol. But who's monitoring that? Because he's got a 70-something percent chance of reoffending again. Like I said, I don't want to march again. We shouldn't have to. Our voices should be heard, but, you know, what's at the top of the list, though? So many problems here in New Zealand that need to be looked into. Flaws in every single system. The system here is designed to fail. So I know we matter, but everybody matters as well. So what's at the top of the list? I want to see movement. Where is my daughter? Like, why is this taking so long? You've got enough there. And they have told me that, you know, they can almost guarantee there'll be no prosecution without her body. If they had to move fast in the first week, they would have had enough evidence there to take them down. That's what I'm more angry about. You should have moved. So we're looking into getting the kaupapa registered so we can start advocating for our families, for our missing people, our victims of serious crime. So our hope is to be able to turn all this mamai into something greater, help people navigate their way through the healing process so you don't fall victim to the system. Just giving people the right tools and showing them they're not alone. If we do unite as one, we can unite as all, as a nation, as our people. That's the way that we've always been. We've just lost our way along the way. For sure. Massive thank you. Without all the love and support, I honestly wouldn't be as strong as I am today. You know, I embrace that aroha or the awhi keeps me motivated and, like I said, gives me strength to keep pushing through. So, bless.
I just want to ask you if you can... share this video far and wide. I need it to reach the two main suspects in my daughter's case. I know they're watching my page, keeping an eye on my page, but I need them to see how much this is affecting myself, my whānau and friends. I'm just giving you one last chance, one more opportunity to tell me where my daughter is. That's all I want. That's all we want. We just want her home. Me and my children are already suffering a lot of mamai from losing Brianna's father. There's not much more that we can take. All you have to do is just tell us where she is. I'm not going to beg you anymore. I know you've done something to her. And I know she wouldn't have gone down without a fight. How do you think it would feel if this was your baby? Just give it up. Just tell us where she is and then you can go on with your life. Just please give her back.